Blog Talk Radio.
Good evening, friends. You're listening to Talk Straight. Your host, Reverend Dr. Reuben Dockery. Talk Straight is a podcast platform sponsored by Building Families and Communities Institute. During the month of Black History Month 2018, imagine with me, if you will, we're taking a young man from urban America, armed with a pistol, full of frustration and anger towards society, and ready to explode, into a 6x6 dark room, locked with you and I for 3 hours. The question is, what do we tell him? Using research from our traveling seminar and lecture series for BFC Institute, we will tell him how history, African American history, lays out a pathway of success for anyone, particularly young males from urban America, ready to explode. Join us each Tuesday and Thursday night throughout Black History Month as we share important information that can transform lives. I invite you to visit our webpage at www.bfcinstitute.com. As you go to our homepage, you will find the various links. One where you can join us live at 7 o'clock p.m. on Tuesday and Thursday night, as well as listen to archive broadcast. We welcome you again to join us, and we look forward to your involvement on our live podcast interaction.
Perhaps two of the most significant events in post-African American experience, thus far, are the efforts to desegregate public schools in America and to ensure that black people have access to the American dream. Those efforts were two landmark cases, Plessy versus Ferguson and Brown versus Board of Education, Topeka, Kansas, beginning 122 years ago in 1896, picking back up yet again in 1954 and subsequently 64 years ago roughly. Tonight we're going to talk from the topic, how to empower youth through educational opportunities. And we're looking at the impact of the last 64 years of desegregation in America. I'm happy to have with us tonight a gentleman who is a professional educator, Mr. Donovan Robertson. We're going to talk a little bit more about him in just a moment and have him come in and share with you, our listening audience, those things that are pertinent. And he has a very powerful educational initiative that I'm convinced is very useful in the process of making the 1954 Act useful even today in 2017. So I encourage you to join us. The number to call in live on air tonight is 657-383-0944. Again, that number is 657-383-0944. Give us a call here. We welcome your question, your comment. All we ask is that you keep it relevant to our topic of discussion and that you be respectful to our guests and other callers. We realize that they're varying opinions, and I don't expect anyone to agree with what I say. We ask you to just listen to it and consider it. And you may have a perspective that will be useful to me and our listening audience. As you know, we start with a monologue, and we want to give some context for our conversation tonight, and we'll use it as a frame of reference if we need to. All right. I expect Pastor Ricky Waller, our regular panelist, to call in tonight. He's a very busy man himself, so but I again, we look for him to call in, and hopefully he'll be able to join with us. But we have our special guest tonight as well. But more importantly, it's important that you give us a call here, 657-383-0944. Our Facebook friends, Ms. Rayma is listening tonight already. Thank you, Ms. Rayma. Feel free to give us a call at any time. And then we have some other folk that's online here that may join us. Looks like Reuben Jr. may have peeked in at us tonight. And Mr. Bryson West and Reverend Kennedy, Cat Booker. Mr. Jordan, Miss Lily, give us a call here. You guys are welcome to join us. Hey, Miss Fleming, join us here. Miss Cobble Cummings and Miss McDowell and Miss Shelton and Miss Willington, welcome. Miss Shelton again, Miss Rock Hill caller D. Shelton. We welcome you guys to join us tonight. Having said that, we're going to go ahead into our monologue so we can bring our guests in and have some substantive conversation. All righty. This is the last night of Black History Month for our talk show. We're on Tuesday and Thursday, so this is our last opportunity. Next month, we'll move into another conversational thread, but this past month, we've been focusing on African-American or Black history, and so we've had a theme, and tonight, again, we're going to give some historical background on events that shaped the Black or African-American experience, okay? And I hope that you gain something from it. And we're going to have Mr. Robertson to talk with us again about some substantive measures that may help improve yet again access and opportunities, but more importantly, outcomes to public education opportunities here in America. How to empower youth through educational opportunities. 64 years after desegregation. Psalms 132 and 12 reads, "If thy children will keep my covenant and my testimony that I shall teach them, their children shall also sit upon the throne, upon thy throne, excuse me, forever." Proverbs 22 and 6, very familiar passage of text, says, "Train up a child in the way he should go, and when he is old, he will not depart from it." Two very important things. All right, let's look at 122 years ago, education from the lens of 102 years ago. Plessy versus Ferguson was a landmark decision in the United States Supreme Court, issued in 1896. It upheld the constitutionality of racial segregation laws by public facilities as long as the segregated facilities were equal in quality. In other words, white folk on one side, freed black folk on another. These laws basically were based on the doctrine that came to be known as the separate but equal doctrine. It legitimized state laws reestablishing racial segregation that were passed throughout the American South. And on the previous show, we talked about the 14 Southern states that were part of the Southern Manifesto for a period of time that and pushed Jim Crow laws. Lest we digress, this is the geographical area that we're making reference to now, all right? But it legitimized the point of racial segregation for those states at that period in history, all right? And this was after the end of the Reconstruction era, basically. The decision was handed down by a vote of 7-1, all right, with a majority opinion that was written by then Justice Henry Billings Brown. And the lone dissent that fought against this in 1896, the lone dissent on the Supreme Court at the time was Justice John Marshall Harlan. Plessy is a widely regarded case as one with the worst decision ever made by the United States Supreme Court in our history, 249 years now. However, despite that fact, the decision itself has not fully and most deliberately, in my opinion, been overruled, because we still see instances where there are loopholes in the Supreme Court decision and the law of the land that provides for certain inequities. All right. Now, this had become the law of the land. Down the road in 1955, now from this point to then, about 64 years ago, there was another landmark case. The Brown versus Board of Education, Topeka, Kansas, was a landmark case in the United States Supreme Court, in which the court declared state laws establishing separate public schools, much like Plessy versus Ferguson, for black and white students to be unconstitutional. Now, it was a big leap for the NAACP and Marshall, who was the primary attorney, Thurgood Marshall, formerly who later became a Supreme Court justice himself. Big leap for him. But nonetheless, the decision overturned Plessy versus Ferguson ruling in 1896. And it allowed state-sponsored segregation insofar as it applied to public education. Handed down on May 17, 1954, Chief Justice Warren was put on the Supreme Court after the death of the Chief Justice, and he was not an attorney or someone who went through the legal system. So he had a more non-legalized mind. He was the person that was on the Supreme Court, the Chief Justice at the time. But under his decision, it was a unanimous decision, 9-0. And it stated that separate educational facilities are inherently unequal. As a result, what was called de jure racial segregation was ruled a violation of the Equal Protection Clause of the 14th Amendment of the United States Constitution, supposedly guaranteeing all citizens equal treatment and representation. This ruling paved the way for integration and was a major victory of the civil rights movement. Okay? And it became a model for many future impact legislative cases. However, the decision's 14 pages did not, and this is what I was talking about early, about it was not most deliberate. It did not spell out any sort of method for ending racial segregation in schools. In fact, when you look at public schools across America, white flight took place in a certain period around the 50s and 60s after this ruling, and those schools by default became segregated again, just predominantly African American or minorities. So it was a reverse effect. So again, my point is that it did not clearly lay out plans to prevent that. The court's second decision, however, it was called Brown 2 in 1955, they did say that states should move to desegregate, quote, with all deliberate speed, end quote. Now, depending on where you were in the country, and depending on what the heart and minds of the state and the citizens were, that determined what deliberate speed meant. Okay, but again, there were inequities. So tonight, what we really want to look at is the fact that after both of these cases, we have young people in urban America in public schools who have significantly low reading scores and math scores and ability to perform across the curriculum. We can find these places in voting precincts or political precincts that are predominantly African American, and public school districts attended predominantly by African American children. I'm not saying there are no whites or Hispanics or other minority groups, but historically, as we talk about black history and the impact of these events on the black experience or the African American experience, I think it's important for us to look at that. Okay? And so tonight we got my good friend here, Professor Donovan F. Robertson, and we're going to bring him in just a second here so he can share with us. And his basic belief is the ability for human beings to transform and change their circumstances. I'm going to let him talk to you about that. He's the author of 8 Simple Steps to Catch Your Dream and taught marketing and entrepreneurship at Fisk University. He's also the founder of CWB World, AIR RMS, and he has a powerful book out. I have a copy of it, readtome.us and 100 Clouds. He's a member of several organizations here, and I'll let him tell you a little bit about his educational experience and background there. We are grateful to have Mr. Robertson in with us tonight, and we appreciate him for joining us there. Let's see. But, Mr. Robertson, how you doing, sir? Let me see if we're trying to bring you in now.
Exactly. How are you today?
Great. Thanks for joining us tonight. We got Pastor Ricky Wall on with us, and we got 1098 with us, and 3072, and 309, 8112. We've got a full house tonight. All right. Well,
good evening, everyone.
Take a few minutes to tell us a little bit about your background and what you do now, and eventually we'll come to your initiative that you're going to share with us tonight there.
Okay, I'll go real quickly. Thanks for having me on. I enjoy the conversation and dialogue. I've had an opportunity, or you guys have allowed me to participate over the last several weeks. My name is Donovan Robertson. I am of Jamaican origin, born in Jamaica, and moved with my family to the States many years ago. I won't say how long ago. my mother is a very, very integral part, a key player in shaping who I am, and a lot of my beliefs. Came single parent household, and based on a lot of these statistics, I should not be here right now. I should be either in jail or dead. And she never allowed us to think along those lines. And so she is parent of the century in my book. And so I live based on a lot of her teachings. And I graduated from Columbia University with my undergrad degree. My master's was from University of Illinois at Chicago. I love to teach. I spent most of my professional career as a risk manager, leading a lot of different countrywide initiatives for Allstate Insurance Company. And I bring a lot of those skill sets to my current endeavors. And our goal is to help individuals transform their lives and to really impact a large number of people.
Sure. Okay. All right. Well, we appreciate that. We're going to get into our conversation. Let me just recognize our callers here. 1098, what do you say, man?
Good evening. How are you? Everyone, how are you? How is everyone, in fact?
Good. I hope you're doing better. He's on the mend here. We need him on the battlefield, so get better there real quick, brother.
Oh, yeah.
All right.
I'm coming.
So 3072, welcome. I'm sorry. Go ahead. I'm sorry. All right. I'm sorry. 3072, welcome to the show.
Thank you.
All right. 8112, welcome to the show again.
Thank you very much.
Yes, ma'am. Glad to have you. And my good friend, Pastor Ricky Wall, as always, he knows how to sit back, and he's the one messing with our clock. When time run out on it, it's his fault. Blame him. Pastor Wall, how you doing this evening?
Yeah, man, y'all doing a good job. I'm standing back taking notes, man. I appreciate that.
Okay.
Everybody's doing fine, right?
Yes, sir. We appreciate you. Let's get right into it. So tell us a little bit about the reading initiative. Now, Mr. Donovan, Professor Robertson was on with us a couple of shows ago, and we had some healthy dialogue based on some disagreement about, and I'm not sure if people fully understood where you were coming from, Professor. talk to us about the importance of reading, but more importantly, this reading initiative you have. Will you take a few minutes to describe that, please, and tell us how we can access that information?
Okay. Thanks again, and good evening, everyone. And please, at any time, if you have any questions, please ask. About 3 years ago, I was approached by several pastors in the Nashville area. And the question was, what are some of the things that we could do to change, positively change some of the outcomes in our communities? And when we looked at the research and the data, we landed on literacy, we landed on reading as the key, as the primary thing that would, that can allow us to change a lot of the issues that we have been faced with for quite a while. And Dr., one of the things that I wanted to make sure that we touch on is when you said that there wasn't a clearly laid out plan, and we are going to get to that, because based on a lot of the work that I do as a mentor with SCORE, working with small business owners and with people in prison and the school districts and so on, you have to have a plan. It helps when you have a plan. No, you have to have a plan in place. Not it helps. You have to have a plan in place so that you understand how things are going and where you need to make any changes, any revisions in order to accomplish the things that you set out to accomplish. And so we identified reading, and when we looked at the research, all of the research said that children who are read to 30 minutes a day have a significant advantage over children who don't have access to those same opportunities. And we set out to create a reading program in the school systems, in the classrooms, where community members would spend 30 minutes a day reading with and to classrooms of children in our neighborhoods.
Wow.
Yes, the research said read to them every day. And we know that there are a lot of programs out there, and there are a lot of people doing a lot of great work. But when we look at the results, we are not moving the needle. We aren't changing those results. And these programs, as great as they are, they, at best, they're engaging with students once a week, or they're engaging with a small number of students. And so our goal was, how do we increase the number of students that we engage with exponentially, and also increase the number of times that we engage with these students?
I see. Okay. Now you don't support that.
Yes.
I'm sorry, if I might. You don't suggest that your process, which I think is a good one, should in any way replace early learning measures before they go to school, or pre-K type activities. That's not what you're suggesting, is it?
No, we are not suggesting that. What we're saying is, here's an opportunity to take a solution that has been proven, and it can supplement, it can complement.
Okay.
As we identify the need to increase the number of times that we engage, so this is a frequency conversation, so increase the number of times that we engage with students. If you have something that works, if there is a solution that works, we want to help that solution increase the number of times that it engages with people, with students, with adults, and increase the number of people that have access to that solution. We have really great solutions out there. However, we're not reaching enough people. We're not impacting enough lives.
Yeah, a lot of people beating their chest, aren't they, about what they're doing. And not very many things being done proactively for particularly those who are suffering the more. Great point. Let me get you to hear from 309 PR Illinois. What do you think about his program, 8112?
Excuse me. I think it's a wonderful thing. And as far as I'm concerned, I blame it on the cell phone partially, because so many children are playing the game on the cell phone. They're texting. They're doing everything with cell phones, and it doesn't make them speak. It doesn't make them read. And reading is important. I love to read. So to me, reading is very important. And along the way, somewhere, we've lost something. I don't know exactly what it is, but I think modern technology is also a powerful tool, and the kids are growing up today, are raised up on it from a baby. I watch my grandson. He knows how to do certain things with his cell phone, which is amazing to me, and I'm looking like, wow, look at this baby. So that's my point. That's my point is that I think, as he suggested, that maybe if we take that away sometime, maybe not totally since it's modern technology, but take it away, even for 2 or 3 hours of the day, put a book in their hand, and maybe it'll work.
Okay. Okay. What you think, 3072? Are we making any sense tonight?
Yeah, you're making some sense, but
some sense
is not going to be made. Yeah, some sense. I mean, everybody's different again, and we have to find the dynamics of each person's situation,
exactly.
I think, to try to address it.
Okay.
Well, Mr. Robinson, you want to respond to that? Yeah, Dr. If I could go through and tell people what we did and how we did and where we are moving with this. As I said, we started with two classrooms in an elementary school in Nashville. And our goals were, number one, to read with and to these kids, these classrooms, every single day, so 5 days a week for 30 minutes a day. And we also wanted to expose them to different volunteer readers. And so we had individuals from different parts of the country, and they would dial in using virtual technology, and they would read with the classrooms. We also had police officers from the East Precinct in Nashville, and these police officers would go into the classrooms. And we did that intentionally because our goal was to increase the number of positive engagements, the number of positive touch points between the students and the police officers. And so we wanted the students to develop and deepen their relationships, and for the police officers to develop and deepen their relationships with the students.
Now, can
so
I ask a question, Professor?
Yes, please. Yes.
So, and I think the program is great. Anything positive that can be offered is wonderful. But I guess I'm in a little bit of confusion. So the show, I mean, or the whole purpose of the show is trying to find ways, I guess, to better the community and reach our young males and, you know, all those great things. So, I mean, you made a really good point about bringing positive role models in to engage in with the students. But you said for 30 minutes a day, right, for 5 days a week. So my concern would be, as one of those young children, you know, and I'm excited to come to class and have this, but when I go home and I don't have this, there's no follow-up. So what I possibly learned there is kind of lost when I leave there. So I think, I don't know, if there can be some programs created for not just school, but the trouble starts a lot of out of school.
Excellent
Would you agree
point.
With that?
Yes.
Okay.
Sorry, go ahead.
No, you go ahead. Go ahead, expound.
So I would say that is an excellent point, and thank you very much. And so what we need some place to start. We need a starting point.
Right.
And so the starting point is, how do we bring additional resources, other people, other experiences, exposures, so that we are engaging with these students on a consistent basis. And so they know that every Wednesday, this police officer is coming in. Every Monday, this person, there's a young lady in Chicago, and she would dial in and engage with these students. At one point, she was in her car parked in the parking lot, and she was engaging with the students and exposed them to Chicago. These are kids in Nashville who some of them have never been to Chicago. And so we were able to do that. So that's where we started. But we also realized with the tools and the resources that we had that there are other opportunities to engage the family members. So as an example, one of the conversations that we're having with a school district in Tennessee, it's allowing and engaging parents so that they can participate and parents can read to and with their children's classrooms. The parents can sit in and view someone else reading to and with their children. And that's just one component, but that's where we're going to start. And then we're going to introduce other elements as we move forward. But we have to start someplace.
Yeah, and I would agree. I mean, I think that's what I would be looking for. You know, and it's sad. You got some parents out there that's jealous of, like, people like yourself or the teacher, or because maybe in some ways they're able to reach their child where they can't or where they don't know how. Let's just say they can't, not say they can't, where they don't know how. So that would be great to teach the family, to teach the mother, to teach the father how to, you know, steal that attention that the child needs to be given them.
Great point. Let me go to 1098. I know 1098 and talking with him, that he has a perspective on this. What do you think about where we're going there, 1098? What's your view on it?
Well, I have to start somewhere. I really don't have much of a comment on it. I know it's a positive thing that they're doing. I hope they are successful. I hope they can get a lot of young people. And I wish they could also get a lot of older people, the parents, with some of them, some of them are uneducated, and perhaps they could get through in lessons also.
Sure.
And I'll just hold, you know, this, it's not a negative thing he's doing, or it's positive.
Well, we appreciate that. Okay. I'm sorry, I cut you off. I apologize. Pastor Waller, any comments? Pastor Waller, you there?
Yes, I am. I am here.
Okay.
Yeah,
Any comments?
I just wanted to ask you. Yeah, I was just listening to earlier about the teaching in the school, you know, and I appreciate that that the kids are learning in school, and they also had the officers, if I'm not mistaken, that would come in the school to listen to them. I wanted to know the purpose of the officers being there, and what purpose was it going to serve that the officers are there to let you, was it to put a scare to the kids, or was it to say, okay, you better do right? Or else this is going to happen. I didn't know the purpose of the officers being there. Because once they do leave the school, and once they leave the school and go home, and I'm so grateful, as 3072 was talking about, what comes after that, because what happens, there's an excitement going on when you get home. And those people who are in a trap makes it look really, really interesting. And if you have a book in your hand reading is one thing, but do it way more heavier than what the kids are doing that's not reading.
I see.
That's got a lot of things going on. So you got that catch 22 going on, you know, and I know starting somewhere is interesting. That's the beauty of it, because getting in trouble is also a starting point. You know, I use a friend of mine, for example, then I'm going to turn it back over. There's a guy that I grew up with, very smart, and reads very well. And he ended up getting 2 life sentences in prison. He had 2 life sentences, you know. And I'm saying all that to say that I think that reading is a good thing, but we got to have something that supersedes anything that the enemy is setting out there for us, for the kids, I would say, because that's just the way it is. There's a lot of pressure going on out there. And once they leave school, who's going to follow up with them? That's the thing. What kind of programs are going to be out there. But the beauty of it is you're getting started. So that's the beauty of it, which is a good thing.
Well, you raise a good question, and I like Professor to respond about the intimidation. Is it intended to intimidate? And I'll let him respond. Yeah. Professor, will you respond to that, please?
Yes. The role of the police officers, it's piggybacking on some of my experiences when I was growing up and also feedback that I received from my son and how he engages and how he engaged with police officers that were in his school. It was not an adversarial relationship. It was not a relationship where they were coming to tell you to do things. He was out throwing footballs with them. I was in the police athletic league when I was growing up. And so we said, how can we create an environment where police officers, their role is to come, and what they did, they went into the classrooms and they read with the kids. They read books with the kids. That's what they did. They didn't talk about drugs. They didn't talk about crime. They didn't talk about anything else. They went in there, and their sole purpose was to read with those children. That was it.
If I might, that is important. A lot of times, particularly in the African-American experience, when we see people in authority figures, subconsciously there seems to be this notion, uh-oh, I'm in trouble. The authority is here on this. And we do have to dispel that notion that because you're in the presence of authority or someone in position of influence, that you have to be afraid or intimidated. And I think that's probably what Pastor Wallace is saying. For sure, when you leave the school, then you have variables that are out of control of the teacher, the principal, and even the whole learning construct. And so 3072 made a good point that falls on us as members of those communities to make sure that we're doing everything we can to build an embracing culture for learning in school, out of school, and everywhere we go. What do you say about that, 8112?
Thank you so much. I feel like this. I speak upon myself because, as I've previously said on your session, that everything sounds very good, but in the real world, which is where I live, and I was raised single-parently too, and I just so happen to think my mother was a very strong black woman, and she did one heck of a job with seven boys.
Okay.
And my point to you is this: I've been listening also, and I was sitting here thinking, well, all these things we're all speaking upon sound good, but everybody is from a different situation.
Mm.
And to say when you're on the outside looking in on somebody else's situation, you really don't know what's going on inside the house.
Well,
so,
now,
with their lives, even school and officers reading. I raised my children to respect the officers, and one happened to kill one of my son, my eldest son, firstborn. So now they don't trust. And as I've seen it in my own city, a lot of them don't trust. So if you don't trust somebody, I don't want you reading me anything.
So let me ask you this question. I don't mean to cut
Please
you off.
Do.
You're making a great point. And I want to go back so we don't lose it, the point you made about everybody's situation is different. Their experience is different. Now, 8112, if my child and your child goes out to the playground to play, should there be rules and regulations to keep everybody safe?
There should be rules and regulations anywhere
and,
you go.
And what should those regulations be based on? Shouldn't it be based on the common sense of those in society who have wisdom and who understand how to keep everybody safe? And before you answer that question, I want to relate that to the learning process. In our community, I don't care how poverty-stricken they are, I don't care how bad the public scores and things, should not the parents say it's important to us to embrace and encourage reading initiatives, math training, and educational things for our children, wherever they are, and to dispel any barriers or myths that may get in the way? Isn't that our responsibility?
Okay. When we say our, as you guys
I'm talking about
working,
parents. Parents,
oh,
members of the community, of the neighborhood you live in. Yes.
Yes, it is. But at the same token, a lot of parents that's raising the kids now generation children, as they were young mothers at one point, and they probably still are. A lot of them still are. They lost their self. So how do, our question is, how do we help them find themselves to help the children know who they are and what is right from wrong? So it's like a debated situation. It's not going to be easy. It is a challenge. But how many people, it sounds good over the radio, how many people actually is out here doing this?
Well,
not a whole, whole lot. Not a whole,
well,
whole lot. There's a whole lot that is, but there's so many more that is not.
Your point is well taken, that this is not something that has totally infiltrated or permeated our communities and our families. You're right about that. And really what we're trying to focus on now, I know this platform, and I think Professor Robinson, is planting seeds that will grow and make the difference, hopefully in the short term as opposed to long term. If we had it already, we wouldn't need it. Go ahead, Professor. Go ahead, Professor.
Doctor, we have a 10-year plan.
Okay.
And we are very, 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 very confident that implementing this 10-year plan will turn around and significantly improve outcomes in the black community.
Okay.
We have a plan.
Okay. Well, define that for us. Talk to us about it right quickly.
Please do.
Take a minute.
We, in order to accomplish things, and I said this before, you have to have a plan. You have to have an action plan that you put in place and that you execute. And so, as an example, in the first year of our plan, we are going to engage with 2,500 K-12 students, and we're going to provide resources that are going to read to them. In the second year, we're going to go from 2,500 to 25,000. In the third year, we're going to go to 100,000. In the fourth year, we will work with 1 million children. In the fifth year, it'll be 5 million. In the sixth year, it'll be 10 million.
Okay.
And we have parallel tracks where we're also going to be working with adults. So in the second year of our plan, we're going to work with 5,000 adults, and we're going to work on reading skills. We're going to work on finance, healthcare, career development, business development. We're also going to include math, finance, healthcare, and career exposure for students in the second year. And so we have a plan in place, and our goal is when we include people that are on this call and others in the community, we are able to do it. And so we have a plan, and we are going to execute on this plan. As an example, and I'm not going to name the school district that we are getting ready to work with, but my company is going to – Hello?
No, go ahead. Keep going.
My company is going to incur the cost to the tune of $125,000 to provide a school district the opportunity to engage with businesses in the community, sports institutions within the community, and also community members to engage with students in the classroom. And we're going to do it for the rest of this school year, and we're also building a summer component where we're going to take their existing summer academy and we're going to make it available to at least 5 times the number of students. My desire is 20 times the number of students, but we'll start with 5 times.
Okay.
And we are going
now,
to push the envelope, and we're going to do this.
Yes, sir. Professor, I'm going to take a leap here, and I'm going to speak for 8112 and 3072.
Oh, yes.
They're going to correct me if I go wrong. Right, ladies?
Yes, sir.
Yes.
Okay. Here's their thing. Here's their deal. We have struggled already, and we know what pain feels and looks like. We have heard many people, white and black, come to us with grandiose ideas, and so far we haven't seen how they've changed the condition or circumstance. So that leads us to always have a very, very keen ear of suspicion when somebody come in with something new. Am I wrong? Have I gone off base yet, lady?
Not at all.
No, I have personally worked with outreach programs that have tried to do some of what the professor was talking about,
mm-hmm.
and it's funny. It all sounds really positive, great, and kudos to you and your company. However, what I'm wondering about, I mean, so will there be certain children that qualify for this? Will, like, middle-class families be left out of this? Will it be just geared toward, like, you know, a certain group or what? And then with that being said, and with that hundred and whatever thousand dollars, I mean, that's great too. But, man, you were talking about making a huge impact. So more money is needed out there. Can your company even help other institutions or programs similar to yours to get on board with you guys and maybe start some other charters outside of that?
All right. Let him respond. Go ahead, Professor.
Yes. And I mentioned in year five, 5 million individuals, and in year 6, 10 million individuals.
Yes.
And so let me back up. We started with 2 classrooms, and we expanded to an entire school within a semester. And so we did that. We then went from a model where we had police officers and other community members engaging with these classrooms, with these schools, to now we have a middle school with 15 to 19 individuals, and they engage with this school every single day. We have a high school with about 30 individuals, and they engage with a separate elementary school, and they are doing test taking, they are writing stories, they're writing plays with these students.
I guess, Professor, the question I was trying to ask you was, again, about impacting the community. So is your company willing to not just keep all the work for themselves, so to speak? And I'm hoping I'm not speaking bad or whatever. But are they willing bring some other people on board and help fund them so they can help you? Okay.
Well, we have a model that says we will work with individuals and we will partner with them. If your organization has a solution that has been proven, a solution that works, and a solution that can scale, we are not going to put solutions in front of people that don't work. That doesn't make any
sense.
Well,
but I mean, and your company would be the one just to say whether it work or not. Is that what you're saying?
Well,
let me say this. We are going to ask for the results.
Yeah. Oh. Let me say this. We
won't make that determination. It will be based on the outcomes that have accomplished.
Hold on,
3072. 1 second. You raise a good question for him, and this is what what I'm hearing him say is there is a process in place to evaluate effectiveness, okay, of anything you say you have done, can do, will do. And what you look at is evidence for that. What's the evidence? Okay, you say you've been in the hood. Hold on 1 second. You've been in the hood for 3 years doing, and you've worked with 500 people. Out of that 500 people, what kind of measurable change or success rate can you document? That's what the professor's saying. So it's not that it excludes anybody with good ideas. There are a lot of people with good ideas, but they haven't thought through them too well. And what we don't want to do.
Well, okay, but how do you know? Can I say this?
Yeah, hold on 1 second. Hold your thought. Don't lose your thought.
Okay.
I ain't gonna get you.
Go ahead.
But what you don't want to do is to place people who are inept or incapable of making a difference in front of people who are already struggling. You're not helping them. All right, go ahead with your question or your. Go ahead.
Now, again, I mean, I understand, I understand about measuring and all of that, but just like the professor's program, they had to start somewhere to start measurements too, is what I'm saying.
Yeah.
So who knows, the 5 and 10 years haven't gotten here yet for them to live up to their projectile numbers. So my point is, since one is fishing around that's hoping to make a positive change, again, why not give somebody else the opportunity too?
I don't think he's saying he's not, though. That's it.
Well, he was saying, though, after evaluating, they have to be able to prove. But if they're just getting started trying to make a difference, they won't never have a chance to say whether it work or not.
I heard him say at the beginning that they're looking to partner. Correct me if I'm wrong.
Okay.
Okay.
Yeah. Yes.
We are going to partner with people, with companies, with organizations, and because this is extremely, extremely important. We want to, and we are going to make sure that you can have an idea, but that idea has to be has to have a fact-based foundation. It's not just, I think that this is a nice thing to do. And there's a ton of research, and people, we have proven solutions from last year and the year before that and the year before that and the year before that. Let's take those solutions and expand and grow those solutions and get them in front of more people. I am not saying not to come up with new solutions, but they need to be fact-based.
Have you guys had any graduates yet?
We do not want to just, excuse me?
Hold on, let him finish. Let him finish his thought, and then we'll continue. Go ahead.
I would say the solutions, we want all of the solutions that work. We want to, and we will partner with those solutions to help those solutions scale and get them in front of more people. We have to get solutions in front of more people if we are going to change the outcomes in our communities.
Sure.
We have to.
Right. Okay. Now, 3072, go ahead and register your question with them relative to some of their evidence of success. What were you asking him?
Well, I was just asking him, and perhaps I missed the how long your program has been in existence. But again, back to measuring success and able to chart it and so on. So how many years, again, have you guys been doing this?
Our program has been in operation for 3 years on the quantitative and qualitative results that we have, and I'll only focus on the quantitative. We saw at least a 1 grade increase in reading literacy with the students who participated in our program compared to the remainder of the students using the standardized tests that the school uses on a regular basis. We didn't come up with anything new. We said baseline the students and let's compare the students that received, I'm going to use the term treatment. I hate that term, but I'm going to use that term. The treatment versus the students that did not. And when we looked at the results, we saw the increases. And as a result of that, we went from 2 classrooms to the entire school. We went to an additional school. We brought in other partners. We've held book drives. So in addition to the reading component, we have – as an example, Woodland Middle School in Brentwood, they conducted a book, actually 3 book drives. And in one of the book drives, there was one student, and she donated 170 books to the elementary school. The students at the middle school, they take trips to the elementary school, and some of them volunteered during the summer to work at the elementary school. And so there are so many
advantages and benefits to this program. And we are going to, as I said, we are talking to a school district. We're going to mm-hmm. implement this program in every elementary school in that district. And
okay.
we'll be able to do it within 2 to 3 weeks.
Let me say this.
One of the beauties of this.
Go ahead, 8112. Go ahead.
Yes, sir. I remember as a young girl growing up on the South Side that we had books on wheels. And they tried
books on
that. I remember these things, and we would be so happy to get on that bus and get us some books. And the only thing they ask is that you took care of those books. So when they come back the next week or the next 2 or 3 days, however long it took for them to get back to your block,
mm-hmm.
what did you learn about the book? So
okay.
when you guys are speaking as if there hasn't been things trying to be done, and now you're speaking as if the quote-unquote African-American kids in the hood, quote-unquote, are the only ones not excelling. That's not necessarily so.
You are absolutely right. You are African-American kids are not the...
is going to work, because you're not doing a whole lot different than what they tried many years ago.
Right. Well, I was just going to ask...
That's not true. And
well, maybe
and so if I could, please.
Yes, sir.
And one of the things that we have got to do is we have to take a look at the outcomes and the results, and if we are not achieving the outcomes, well, first we have to set some goals. What are we trying to accomplish so that we are able to determine if the things that we're doing, if they're working or not? And if they're not working, then we have to do something different. So that's where we need to start. And so we're doing that. We are saying we need to engage on a more regular basis, and we also understand that it's not occurring in the homes as much as we would like it to, and we're not going to wait for these parents to change their minds and decide that, oh, this is something that I need to do. We're going to engage with these students and provide them access to these resources. And we are going to, and we have, and we've proven that we can scale this and do it at a relatively low price point in order to make this available to a lot more individuals. We are going to, and we want community members to engage and to make this happen. I also want to address your point about African-American students, black students. They are not the only ones. You are absolutely right. So right now, they are at the bottom of the list when you look at the proficiency results. We are at the bottom of the list.
I've heard statistics.
That is a fact.
See, you are a very intelligent man, but there's a whole folks like, a lot of people like, as well as myself, not to be argumentative, but to tell you how I feel, I'm on the outside. See, I'm on the inside looking out. You're on the outside looking in. You guys are trying to figure out. But I do this every day, trying to figure out a different way, hoping the kids can come around. It's not just certain category that's out there that exists. There's another one where they're a mom and most people in a suit and tie frown their faces on a lot of kids that are selling drugs and doing different things, if I may, that they say they ain't got no business doing. And the children are saying, yeah, you come up to me when you were speaking about the police, the po-po around here is running around hurting kids. Not only them, there's a lot of times you also speak about what you guys are doing. But what happens when the mama, you tell the kids, well, we're going to read to you for such amount of time, and then they go home and the little children, what happens to them after they say, well, mama, can I go get on the reading bus? Can I go to the program that they set up? What happens to them kids when their dreams are shattered for that reason? Did y'all not think about part of it?
Oh, Hold on
one second. And one of the things that I mentioned earlier, and this is one of the things that we are going to implement with this school district, with the 90 elementary schools, we are engaging the parents because we hear you, we understand, and we realize that the things that you learn in school, they have to be reinforced when you get home.
Yeah.
You cannot
have to have that reinforcement at home.
All right.
You cannot.
So we are building that.
8112. 8112.
Yes.
Hold on one second. I hear you.
Sorry.
I feel your passion. Let me do this. Let me do a station identification here, and then we'll come back. We got about 30 minutes to go. All right? And we want to give 1098 an opportunity and Pastor Wallace to weigh in. I appreciate you, ladies. Y'all right on it. You've been listening to Talk Straight. Our topic tonight is how to empower youth through educational opportunities. 64 years after desegregation. When we come back after this brief break, we're going to hear again from Professor Donovan Robinson, who is our guest tonight, and he's talking about a regional initiative. I appreciate the engagement there. This is how we learn. This is how we learn. So when we come back after this brief break, we'll pick up with that.
Hey, they call me Pook. I'm from these streets. Somehow, I live to see my 18th birthday. I managed to graduate from juvenile detention to adult prison. People try to tell me I should grow up and be a man. But I'm the best man I know. Somebody asked where I see myself 10 years. Man, I'm just trying to survive these streets day by day.
BFC Institute needs your help to reach the Pookies across America. Please support our traveling educational lecture series addressing perceived threats to African American males. To learn more, please visit us at bfcinstitute.com. That is bfcinstitute.com. Simply click the red sticker for details.
Donovan Robinson, who is talking about how to empower youth through educational opportunities. And we're talking about 64 years after the landmark civil rights case desegregating public schools in America. Pastor Ricky Wall is on with us, our regular panelist, and we got with us again our good friend from Peoria, Illinois, who's joined us, as well as 3072, who's with us, and 1098. We don't want to overlook anyone. So when we left on the other side of the break, we had a pretty good conversation, dialogue on, and I think raised some great points. 8112 as well as 3072 raised some really, really great points in terms of being very cautious that we don't get so caught up in the what, that we don't really look at how it's affecting everyone, because there are other barriers to learning and even other social factors that impede people's interest in what may be good for them. For instance, an alcoholic can't get past their inebriation to see the fact that they're killing their liver and destroying themselves. So, with that being said, let me, 1098, you've been listening, man. Give us some feedback right now.
Yes, I have. I get very discouraged when I listen to a lot of people talking about these so-called stats and numbers and things of that nature. It's one thing is me not being dumbed down and sleep. When it comes to education in America concerning all race of people, we are a small group of people, black people. All the minorities are a small group. You have more white people here in America than any other race that can't read.
Mm-hmm.
Totally illiterate.
Okay.
Totally illiterate. Totally.
Okay. That's
just
true.
Something that I never buy into. Bring me all the stats you want. But still, they outnumber us. They are more, it's more of them uneducated than it is us. They say we are 13% as being blacks in America.
Mm-hmm.
You know,
mm-hmm.
School is not cut out for everyone, but the ones that are going to go, let them go. Now, I do agree that every man, woman, and child on the face of this earth should be able to read. And if anyone is trying to stand up and do that, I'm with them 100%. But get the stats right. Get them right now. You know, get them right. It's more of them than it is us. Hispanic. They said we are that we on the low end of the totem pole. That's the stats. Remember, as being black in America, you're always going to be on the bottom.
Okay.
And I hold
that. If I could just answer real quickly, their percentages and their raw numbers. And I don't care what data source we use, people. Let's find a data source, and wherever we land. But at the end of the day, we need to stop talking about things, and we need to start doing things. Okay? I don't want to help all the white people who can't read. Not right now. Okay? I don't. I'm black, and my goal is to help black folks. Okay?
Okay.
That's my goal. And yes, there are more white people who are illiterate. Excuse me one second, please. There are more white people who are illiterate. Yes, there are more. I'm not concerned about them. I am really not concerned about them right now. I want to improve the outcomes. I want to work with you. I want to work with the organizations that are there. And I want us to focus on improving our outcomes. Let's focus on improving our outcomes.
Thank you. And
so
I agree 100%. So the stats and all that, leave that behind and concentrate, like you said, you're concentrating on the black people. So when it comes to that, leave, just do what you're going to do. And you know, that really bewilders me. You know, that hurts me in a sense.
Do what
we are going to do, not what I am going to do. Here in the United States of America. And I don't agree with that. You have educated black men and women.
He owns it. That's right.
And I hope.
I appreciate you, sir, whoever you are.
Well,
I
appreciate you.
I'm not angry at the professor and things of that nature. It's just the numbers. All these numbers, even when it comes to voting and everything else, I don't buy that because at the end, it's totally wrong.
Help
these black children read. Help them read.
Yeah. That's interesting you say that, 1098. That's interesting you say that. Pastor Waller, a brief comment, sir?
Yeah, I'm grateful for everything that's been said. I'm grateful, man, for everything that's been said, and I like the excitement that the professor has. You know? But I was just reminiscing, I was just thinking about, you know, how important reading should be. And in some of the guys that I grew up with, you know, that I was just telling a friend of mine about when I was in high school and in the 10th grade, this guidance counselor said something to my friend and asked him why did he hang around with me.
And I mean, he's one of those guys that was very smart, you know, in school and everything. And he's my friend. We play ball together, things like that. And so, you know, while being in school, you know, he was the kind of guy that when you call on him to read, he could read and he could go on and do it. But I was able to hold my head down and have my head down on my desk because I didn't want to read. And he would hit me on my head and say, "You better go on and read," and everything like that. So I'm just saying all that to say this. He ended up getting messed up on the drawers by following me. And I like, you know, what the professor is talking about, because he's very concerned about that, and he wants to be concerned about our people. And it's a beautiful thing, but I don't know about the status and how many people are reading and how many are not. I just know that if we don't get the correct information out there, it is going to be a harmful thing for us if we don't walk in togetherness. So whatever one may be able to do, the other one may not be able to do. But when you use your gift, whatever your gifts are, and participate, I think that's what's going to really actually make much better for us. And I just want to be encouraging by what I'm hearing right now, and let it be known there's one thing I like about togetherness. It says how good and how pleasant it is for brothers to dwell together in unity. Because if we are scattered and we are everywhere and nobody is doing anything, as I heard him say about, I just want to make sure we put action to what we're talking about. Right. Because that's more important than just talking. You know, it's good to talk about some things, but he's saying, where is the action? He want to work with you, and he want to work with me. When I heard him say that, I said, that's a heart-filled man that's saying, I'm ready to get the job done. And that, to me, is where the work is put out at, getting the job done. What is it that we're going to do to get the job done? Who has the solution? Let's put it in motion.
Yes.
Because there's a lot of work to be done out there.
Yes, sir. Yes, sir. Thank you, Pastor. Let me say this, people. This is an academic discussion. And by that, we mean we are looking at how to learn from what has happened, what is currently going on, and what we expect to happen in the future. Now, I'm an academician myself, and I use a lot of data and research to inform my decisions, even with this traveling lecture series. That's how we know what cities we're going into, because we look at what the reality is on the ground with the people. Now, the way you know how many people got stabbed or got shot is you look at the police reporting to show the incidents of those things that took place. Now, why are those people getting stabbed, getting shot? Is it because they're bad people? Is it because they're black? Is it because they're white or Hispanic? That's a whole other conversation. What we know is people are getting stabbed, getting shot. But when we look at the opportunities to build businesses, to get meaningful jobs, and to have a life in society that is not one of poverty and being left behind. And I think we all can experience, everybody on this phone knows what it's like to be poor and the struggle, right? Yeah. But when it comes to moving forward and breaking that cycle, the question is, what are the things we need to look at realistically to change those things? What examples do we have? What evidence, what information can inform us? This is primarily where we're coming from in terms of the academic discussion and identifying, based on recorded numbers, where we need to put our work. Let me allow Professor. Okay, who was that? Who was that? Hold on 1 second, Professor Robinson. Who was that trying to say something?
This is 8112 once again.
Okay, go ahead, 8112.
I'm one of those people, as you guys refer to me as. Not taking it personally, but just.
Oh, we love you. What you mean? We love you, girl. What you talking about?
I'm one of those people down here on my planet.
Okay, I live out here.
I talk to kids, young, middle-aged, babies and all, honey. Drug dealers and all. I tell them the right thing I think they should do. So,
yes, ma'am.
Keep saying it sounds good, but I'm actually not in the streets like that, but I live here in this poverty, as you speak of. And I don't live out there on the South anymore. but I know. I know.
Yes.
And
sure.
I can speak freely about this, and I'm heartfelt about that. Maybe he is heartfelt, Professor, with all due respect. I applaud you for what you are trying to do and what you say you're going to accomplish. This good old world, we know it may not be here in 5 years. So what I'm talking about is working on today. And tomorrow, if we live to see that. I ain't talking about 5 years, and statistically speaking, I'm speaking reality now.
Okay.
And
well,
that's where I come from. Excuse me if I'm sounding a little loud, but I'm...
No, wait a minute. 8112, wait a minute. You know I love you, doctor, like peanut butter love jelly on wheat bread now, on wheat bread. Look here, 8112.
Heck yeah, I like wheat bread.
Look here, and I'm going to turn the floor over to Professor Robinson in just a second.
Listen, yes, sir, I would like his response.
Listen, 8112. One thing, I've been black all my life, okay? And I grew up in some of the roughest, toughest experience that black folk historically have in America, all right? Now,
yeah.
I'm not going to use that as a crutch or an excuse not to improve myself,
mm-hmm.
but watch this. Watch this. One thing I've observed all these years is that people that have shared the same experience with me have a tendency when we get in a scrape not to want to face reality. Because in their minds, it's like, you're trying to send me back through my pain again. You're trying to make me remember that. That's not the objective.
I disagree.
Oh,
because...
Well, hold on one second.
I'm sorry.
Now, this is my experience now. I'm talking about my experience.
Okay.
It may not be everybody's experience. But there are a great number of people that look like me, been through the same things I've been through. They often
mm-hmm.
don't want to accept these things as a reality because it hurts. I get that. But
mm-hmm.
just like you break your finger, if you're going to get that thing fixed, you're going to have to pop it back in place first. That's going to hurt.
Yeah.
That's going to hurt. No pain, no gain.
Like I'm hurting now.
But my point was this.
Let me,
I was pretty doggone very, very with master degree and doing a whole lot of things as you guys are speaking up. And me, myself, they going somewhere I didn't even try to go to, but I'm not no dummy.
Right,
some people
right.
got book knowledge, some people got street knowledge, and it's simple as that. And some people just got their parental knowledge that they stick with, which is myself.
Okay. Let me let Professor respond to you, okay, 8112?
Yes.
Now, don't you leave me. I know you want to leave me, but I refuse to let you go. Wait a minute. Go ahead, Professor Robinson.
I would like to share with everyone. I'm not going to go and tell about how dirt poor I was, but my son makes fun of the fact that my swimming pool was a mud hole, and when a hurricane went by, we jumped in the mud hole, and that was our pool, right?
It's not funny.
I'm being honest.
But that
was my upbringing. But anyway. Yes, it was. Yes, it was. Now, but here's my point, folks. In 6 years, we are going to engage with 10 million young black people, and we are going to work with them in a lot of different areas to help them learn how to code, to help them learn how to read, to help them with math, to help them with all of these other opportunities. And we're also going to engage with 5 million adults. And that is our plan. We have
right.
a 10-year plan. And I've shared with you, this is how we are going to implement this plan. And we are going to do it because we have to do it. If we are truly going to change the outcomes within our communities, and we will include other components, we will bring everything to the table. But at the end of the day, we have a plan that we are going to execute. And we can adjust that plan, but we have to do something. We've spent a lot of time talking. Now is the time for us to act if we are serious about changing the outcomes within our community. I'm not worried about white people. I'm not worried about Latinos. I'm not saying that I don't like them. I don't hate them. All I'm saying is I'm focusing on
people that look like me, that look like my kids, that look like my nephews, that look like my nieces, that's where my focus and my emphasis is. We can tweak things as we move forward.
Okay.
I'm back.
Okay, thank you. I'm sorry. We look like we lost you there for a second, 309. Listen, we got 10 minutes, guys. Let's try to bring a little closure here. And I think the way to thank you, Professor Robinson, listening audience, you've been listening to Talk Straight. And, again, we've had Professor Donovan Robertson on with us as our special guest. And he's talked about a 10-year plan and some things that an organization he's working with are doing. Now, I should say that he and I are working because one of the cities that we've forged a relationship with the police department to try to dispel that myth that all police are bad and that there's nothing they can do to engage the African-American community is we're talking with the chief in one of the cities we're targeting to bring his reading initiative there so that police officers can have more positive engagement in a academic setting. So I say that to say that I had an opportunity to some degree vet what he's talking about. And you know, everybody don't agree with it. And I'm not asking you to. But I'm simply saying we brought him on today because it has some substance to it. And I believe that if you take time to really understand it, you'll see how it can make a difference. That being said, we recognize that there is a larger deal here. So let me do this in this next 8 minutes or so. 8112, I'm going to give you and 3072 an opportunity to go first. And then 1098, and then we'll get Mr. Robinson give a final thought, and Pastor Waller wrap us up in here. We'll get ready to get on out of here. So let's go with you first, 3072.
I just wanted to thank the professor for making an effort to try to make change. I'm done.
Okay. Well, thank you for being with us tonight. All right. 8112. She on fire tonight, y'all. She on fire tonight.
Well, no, I mean, it's kind of touchy to me because I take it personally. As well as he, as the professor, with all due respect, sir, by no means did I mean to insult your intelligence because I cannot do that. But what I am trying to say is what I said, and I meant what I said. It's hard out here, very hard, and it's even harder when the little children, as you speaking, and a teenage young man and a young man that's trying to become a man, you haven't reached us yet. We like some people say, in Africa, and nobody cares. And somebody do care, we got that part. But we hear a lot of words, and they sound good dynamically, but realistically speaking, it ain't adding up to me. So, hey, good luck on your journey, and I wish you well and success.
Well, we appreciate you tuning in with us tonight, and I hope you will watch my efforts and his efforts and others because time will truly tell the story.
Yes, it
but
will.
Again, we appreciate you weighing in there. 1098, what about it, man?
You know, as I stated, you know, I think what he's doing is fantastic. I hope he can reach the millions of people that he wants to reach. I hope that the ones that are being taught, that they could pass, you know, what they've learned on. And, you know, the race of people, you know, they would, you know, get a little stronger. But, you know, as stated, you know, I here in the United States of America, in every city, every town, they know how many people in the town got high school diploma, GED, associate degrees, bachelor's degrees, college degrees, the whole nine yards, they know. But you have a lot of black people that didn't finish school, and they are very intelligent. So when it comes to those stats and things that make you, just because a person don't have the paper, that does not mean they don't have the knowledge, you know. So, you know, I'm very optimistic when it comes to those numbers because I look at one thing again, and I'm a whole. You got more uneducated white people here in America. You got more white killers in America than any other race. A lot of things are swept up under the rug. We are not a bad people. We are good people. But, you know, we are still growing, and we're going to get past a lot of things, all this drug setting and killing and things in that nature. It's a process going on, but eventually, you know, it would die down in our hole. And I appreciate what the professor is doing.
Well, thank you, brother. We appreciate you joining us tonight. Professor, in the next couple of minutes, tell us how we can access your website or connect with you, and give us any final thoughts before we leave. We have about 5 minutes here.
Real quickly, at the end of the day, folks, we can access whatever data points, whatever we want to look at. But the question that we have to ask ourselves is, are we improving and are we accomplishing and achieving the outcomes that we think are outcomes that we can accomplish? And realizing that racism exists, racism is going to exist forever, realizing that there are systemic things that are there,
yeah.
If we focus on, shift 10% of our focus to the things that we can control, and let's identify the things that we can control and those things that will drive the outcomes that we desire, and then let's do it. I understand that others are similarly situated. I completely get it. I'm not focused on them. I'm just being honest with you.
Okay,
what are the
okay.
things that we control that we can do? And then let's do it, and let's do it on a large scale where we get significant change.
All right.
Amen.
You can
tell us how
you
we can get in touch
go out. Yeah, you can, Dr. Dockley, you can publish my number, and please
okay.
call me. I love to talk right. to people. I tell people I'm one of the few folks that I invite Jehovah's Witnesses in so that I have somebody to talk to. that's a joke.
Okay.
You can go to cwb.world, communities without barriers.world. Our goal is to bring solutions closer to the communities so that it's easier for people to gain access to the tools, the resources, the skills that they need to transform their lives and to transform their communities. We are looking for and we're going to work with churches and provide revenue opportunities for churches to become, I'm going to use the term, satellite locations. So if you think about people renting their homes through Airbnb, we are doing something similar. We call it Air RMS for Rent My Space. We're going to rent space from churches and community centers and deliver training and solutions directly into the communities. And
I hate to be
compensate.
Rude. We're up against a hard cutoff here. Thank you. We have to bring you back. Thank you. I appreciate it. Pastor Waller,
okay.
right quickly, give us about 35, 40 seconds, man.
All right. I want to thank everybody who had a chance to share. The number one thing is that when we endure hardship as a good soldier, we have to keep on fighting, because the Word of God says that faith is the substance of things hoped for, evidence of things not seen. So keep doing what you're doing, and your effort does count.
Yes, sir. Yes, sir. Yes, sir. Listen, you've been listening to Talk Straight. This is your host, Reverend Dr. Reuben Dockery. Tonight we were talking from the topic, how to empower youth through educational opportunities, 64 years after D-State. I want to thank all of our callers for joining us tonight and our guest, Professor Robinson. We'll be back Thursday night. We're going to start a new theme, and the focus on the month of March, it's going to be how it is we can make cultural transformation that lead to success of young people and old. So that's our focus for the month of March, making how to make cultural transformation that make a difference. Thank you all again, and we're going to be back with you on this coming Thursday at 7 o'clock p.m., another episode of Talk Straight. With that, we leave, and we ask you to join us on this coming Thursday. Thanks again to our guests and to all of our callers.
Thank you.
get enough.